Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, July 14th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the website, whyagain.org. And thanks to the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, if you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file that you click and download and copy it, print it off as much as you'd like, and use it over and over again. That's the chapter of the book that you can download and read contains a narrative description of that tool. And for further assistance in using that tool, figuring it out, how to use it in your life, you can go to the archives of this show for the last 11-plus years. And there's some highlight shows listed there that have contained the audio files of people who've been stepped through the use of that tool, the worksheet process itself. And you can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app. If you type in those three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you choose to tap on that, that will give you a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And as we like to say, we hope people do that soon and often, because it frequently leads to not just an improvement in their life, but comments, questions, answers, or testimonials. And if you have any of that to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone. Alternatively, you can send an email to tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And we hope you do that. We hope you let us know how we can be of service. That is our primary intention with this work, with the website, with the radio show, with the support groups that we run on Tuesday and Thursday night. And this is a Thursday night, so there's another support group offering for tonight. And all the information that you would need to join us through Zoom, wherever you are on the globe or in some orbiting spaceship that also has Wi-Fi, All the information you would need to be able to join us is available on mindshiftersacademy.org. And please remember there is a separate login information page for Tuesdays and a separate one for Thursdays, because we've had people, including me, who've had some difficulty trying to log in with the information that's appropriate for Tuesday, and we're trying to use it on Thursday night and it doesn't work. So that's our intro. We are here to entertain comments and questions and answers. We are here to help people explore the use of these tools. And my mind wanted to say, to celebrate life and grow together, which clearly is part of this. I had occasion recently to look up the lyrics to the song For Good, and it's from the musical Wicked, and I'm typing it in again to bring it up because, you know, this work that we're doing is about helping all of us grow, helping all of us connect and have a better experience of life. And the critical line from those lyrics of, you know, For Good from Wicked are, I've heard it said that people come into our lives for a reason, bringing something we must learn. And we are led to those who help us most to grow, if we let them. And then we help them in return. Well, I don't know if I believe that's true, but I know I am who I am today because I knew you. Who can say if I've been changed for the better? But because I knew you, I have been changed for good. And, of course, there's that double entendre there. There's that double meaning. Who can say if I've been changed for better? But because I knew you, I've been changed for good. You know, I don't know exactly where all of this is leading. I don't know the meaning of life. I don't know which spiritual teachings are most true. I just know what works for me. I know that as I look for ways to keep myself in the moment, changed for good, as I practice sharing with others what I've learned, I learn it at deeper and deeper levels. And I recently listened to a talk from Byron Katie, and in it at one point she says people ask her if she still does her worksheets. And her answer was, every time she steps somebody else through a worksheet to question their negative beliefs, she's questioning her own. So every time she does a worksheet with somebody else, she gets benefits. Even if the overtly stated issue that that person is working on isn't the same as her issue, she's reviewing the process. She's reminding herself that she only suffers when she believes her negative thoughts, and she gets the benefit of learning to live more actively in the question. And that's what we're here to help all of us do. Everybody who is a narrator for this show or the host of this show, everybody who is assisting with the switchboard, everybody who calls in, everybody who listens without calling in. The goal of it all is to improve our experience of life. And we've been working with the Way of Mastery since January 10th of this year. And I've talked to people about how, for me, the Way of Mastery is, my short summary of it is that it's a kinder, gentler version of the Course in Miracles. And it's fairly direct. It talks about learning to not let seriousness enter the mind and to play, to rejoice, to dance, to sing, to have fun as you're doing whatever exercises are recommended, etc. And it's pretty simple, it's pretty direct until we get to lesson 16. And when we get to lesson 16, it starts talking about the origin, the birth of consciousness, and whether or not there is any physical existence before consciousness comes into existence, or if consciousness was always here. And as I was talking about yesterday, I'm trying to use the lens, the focus, with this book, with every chapter of this book, that doesn't ask, is this right, is this wrong, is this literal, is this true? The focus lens that I put on when I approach this Course in Miracles, The Way of Mastery, Guy Finley's work, Michael Rice's work, Byron Katie's work, Diedrich Wolzak's work, the lens I put on is, how can I find similarities from one to the next? Because my experience has been that everything that works is a lot like everything else that works. It may have a different structure of thought. It may have a different vocabulary. It may have different tools that it suggests that people use. But if it's something that helps bring about fundamental, substantial, lasting change, I would offer that it's just like everything else that brings about lasting change, fundamentally lasting change. So as we move into the second book here with The Way of Transformation, after the first 12 lessons, which were titled The Way of the Heart, The Way of Transformation, the first two lessons are titled You Are Unlimited Spirit, and then the next one is titled The Wise Use of Time, and then the next one is titled Love or Fear, The Choice is Yours. And as I've mentioned, those three lessons seem like just extensions of the first 12. Only it's a bit of a refinement, it's a bit of a focus to really try to drive home the point to us that we are not just the body, that we have this consciousness that is not bound to the body and is not limited to what the senses can reveal to us. And then lesson 16 is titled The Birth of Egoic Consciousness, and it's talking about levels of creation. And it says the first level of creation is pure spirit. There's no time, there's no space, left, right, up, down, there's no physical matter to be experienced. Spirit is, always was and always will be, spirit, consciousness. To my way of thinking, these are interchangeable words. And this chapter is going to be giving our conscious logical mind something to hold on to or chew on or distract itself with as we move into exercises to try to expand our awareness of our true nature, of the fullness of our nature. So, you know, at one level, consciousness is there, and consciousness exists even before the birth of the soul. But there's this movement of awareness. There's this movement of energy. And I hesitate to use the word energy there because our scientists would say that, you know, there is no matter. It's everything is energy that's been lowered in its vibration to be perceptible to the senses. So the use of the word energy there is probably a misspeaking on my part. But there was consciousness prior to the birthing of a sense of an individual soul. And then there's the creation of the soul. And that segment of the lesson says, now, in this ceaseless movement from that which never moves, think about that. Here's another koan. Here's another self-contradictory statement that will occupy your conscious mind until it wears itself out. Because from right back at the very beginning of this work, it says in the first lesson, the way of the heart, this pathway that we're engaging in, is not the way of the intellect. Your intellect was intended to be a very simple servant of something more integrated, more wise, more whole. And so here we are again with a statement in the book that will make the Western mind spin. How can you have something that is in ceaseless movement and never moves? It's like a riddle for your conscious logical mind. And what we're encouraged to do in this work is just notice either how quickly we read past that as though the words are meaningless, or we argue against them and want to throw the book down and say, this is just gobbledygook. Neither of those two approaches is useful for growth, for expansion, for learning. So the text reads, now, in this ceaseless movement from that which never moves, just as the ray of light emerges from the light divine, it is unbounded, eternal, and unobstructed. In the very desire to be creative, to extend creativity ceaselessly, and that's just another way to talk about what creation itself is, in that realm, spirit begins to condense or descend. Now, the text recognizes these are spatial terms, and there is no such thing as space yet. What we're talking about is a time before time and space were created. And so we're limited by even the words we can use to point in this direction. We're limited by the words that come out in a phrase that might be considered a koan or a paradox. Now, in this ceaseless movement, within the middle of a ceaseless movement from that which never moves, and so your conscious logical mind might say, okay, I can make sense of that. Here is this globe of energy that's got energy spinning in it ceaselessly, but the globe itself never moves. Okay, I got it. If your mind is doing something like that, just chuckle at it, because that's the mind of a kindergartner that's trying to understand, you know, particle physics. It's so limited. It's a useful stage of development, but it's not arriving anywhere. It's not truly embracing the experience. It's stuck spinning in an intellectual exercise. So the text goes on and acknowledges, okay, again now we're using language that finds its source on your side of the fence, that is, on the side of the fence of physical, phenomenal existence, not on the side of the fence of pure spirit. Because in the realm of pure spirit, language is not needed. Language doesn't actually exist the way it does for us here in physical form. The text goes on and says, spirit continues its dance as the one mind, the creator, entertains the extension of its creation. And spirit begins to condense into something that has not yet ever occurred. The thought, and again, we're still operating at some level of pure thought, pure potentiality. There is not yet the deep darkness of space of your universe or any dimension whatsoever. And in that experience, something begins to condense into the thought of individuation. Here is the beginning of a sense of an individual self. Here is the beginning of the dream of separation. I as separate from you or it or they. And then it gives us a way to have a visualization of how this might work. Perhaps you've seen in your television commercials when the milk is poured into the glass in slow motion. As the milk hits the glass at the bottom, it begins to move back up the sides as the cup begins to fill. At the very last moment, when the carton is tilted back away from the glass and the pouring has stopped, the motion that has been started creates the phenomenon of a circular drop of milk that arises from the milk, and for a very temporary moment it seems to be separated from the body of the milk in the glass itself. In that split second, it emerges, and you who are watching the screen, you have an awareness of an individuated drop of milk that seems to exist completely independent of the body of the milk itself. But that's through the magic of this slow motion camera. But then in the next moment, it drops back into the body of the milk, and you lose awareness of it as a separate thing, a separate drop of milk. But it is still milk. And from your place of perception, it merely looked as though it had a separate existence. That's what they're trying to help us understand is the truth of our consciousness, of our soul, of our spirit, of our awareness. We have this dream that we are separated from everyone and everything. We have a dream about a hallucination or an illusion about how different our life is from somebody else's. When in essence, when it's all said and done, when the drop of milk drops back into the glass, it's indistinguishable from all other milk. All consciousness is indistinguishable from all other consciousness. All consciousness is part of the same whole. The text goes on and says, now, that's an analogy, of course, since I'm here to let you know that the soul is not made of milk. So there's a tongue-in-cheek reference. But it does create a picture for you of what occurs when the body of spirit continues in its entertainment of creativity, constantly extending and expanding, out of which emerges what we have called the soul, or the dream of separation, or the idea of an individuated self. That first subtle thought of individuation, of that which has an individuated expression of the fullness of spirit, which is light, which is all of creation. Why would this happen? The text goes on and asks, why would this happen? It happens simply for the joy of extending creation. That one consciousness, that one mind, that God mind, that mind of creation, might be aware of itself in an endless variety of form. This is where it begins. This is the delight of creation itself. This is what you are. In pure soul, there is only pure potentiality. That's what you are. At this point in a process of what you might call the evolution of the soul, the creation of the soul, there has not yet been what you would know as experience. There is, however, the first subtle awareness of the one capital S self beginning to become aware of itself. So cycle back through this, beginning the dream of separation. There is no actual separation. There is no physicality. There's not a single atom. There's not a dust cloud. There's not a nebula. There's no up or down, left or right. There is just consciousness, spirit. And this work would have us use the word soul to denote a dream of separation from all other consciousness, that each individual soul is just a dream, is just a hallucination, is just an illusion of separation from the one mind, because the one mind is all there is. The text goes on, and the next heading is, separation is birthed. And the text reads, as soul continues the extension of light, the extension of pure creativity, it condenses, it descends to the next level. Again, since we're using language from your side of the fence, there are not many other ways to speak about this. The soul condenses, the soul descends, it begins to create a deeper awareness of itself, but there's still nothing to condense from. There is still no thing that our physical senses could detect. If there were a human being, he, she, or it would not have a body and would not be able to detect any of this movement from that which never moves. The text goes on and says, now its awareness of itself as spirit is taking on a new coloration, a new vibration. It's got the image of a body of water when the weather changes, and it's in this space of complete fluid motion, and every drop of water in the lake or the pond or the river is all connected. And then as the temperature drops, the movement of the molecules in the water begins to slow down, and eventually some actual ice begins to form on the pond or the lake. And that's like this condensing. There's this slowing, descending, slowing, this individuation, this strengthening of the dream of separation so that it becomes more real to the consciousness that's having the dream. Now its awareness of itself as spirit is taking on a new coloration and a new vibration. It's becoming very close to what many of you have experienced in your own meditations and prayer, or the time you heard a child cry, or you walked through a forest at dawn, when your egoic mind was temporarily transcended and you had a sense of your oneness with God, with the Creator, with all that is. And yet you still felt separate from all of creation. You had this sense of being united and yet somehow different. Here is where the separation can be said to have occurred. For it is here, in the first level of pure potentiality of this unique thought, that which intelligence is, that which love is, that which light is. This is it, consciousness, light, love, intelligence. And within that, we have created an experience of separation where none exists. The text goes on and says, I have referred to this in A Course in Miracles as mind with a capital M, which is not merely the prattling that goes on in the human brain that you refer to as thinking. Mind with a capital M is so much more vast than that. It is here in this first level of subtle perception of the self, capital S self, your higher true self. It is here in the first subtle level of perception of the self as an individuated matrix of awareness that has awareness of itself, and yet that self or creator or God is somehow something different than what the soul perceives to be itself. Here is where the first unique thought of separation is birthed, at this very subtle point, long before the planets of your universe arose, long before the multidimensionality of creation came into being. Here, you are. Here, there is but one soul. All minds are joined. Here, there is but a unique expression of the one spirit, itself the unique expression of that one existence, intelligence, energy, creation, creator, God, that one who eternally is. Here, creativity gives rise to the power of thought. It is from the field of thought, pure thought, that creation will now begin to spring immediately into being. Here, at this subtle level, the drop of milk has seemingly separated itself, and now it feels awareness of itself as separate from the body of milk. And for a moment, for just a moment, there's pure joy, because it is still the one doing it. The one is doing it out of entertainment, out of pure play, out of the sheer exuberance of extending itself and its infinite power ceaselessly without limitation. For you see, the Creator who becomes you held the thought, I certainly can't separate myself from myself. And if the Creator had held that thought, I cannot separate myself from myself, that would have been a limitation. And so the One, the source of all things, the One that is all things, creates a drop of itself along with the perception that it perceives itself as separate from something that is now, for the first time ever, now it is other. The concept of other has just been birthed in the mind of the Creator. Here is the germination. Here the seed is planted for egoic consciousness. But that is still a little further along in the story. So egoic consciousness doesn't exist yet, but the groundwork has been laid for egoic consciousness to come into being. The text goes on and says, as that first thought of separation is dreamt, a new energy is born. That which has been pure joy, that which has been pure freedom, pure safety, it now changes form slightly. You could say that a drop of milk within the drop of milk seems to separate and take on its own energy. And that energy is what we have called fear. Here, right at this moment, in a process that doesn't really fit the word process, here in the movement of creation, in the movement of that which never moves, here is born what we have called fear. This, what has been born, is not extension. It's the opposite of extension and creation. It's contraction, or the experience of contraction, as fear emerges in awareness. Now, once this happens, and we use the words like once, and as this happens, and so it wasn't happening, and now it is happening, and then it won't happen again in the future, but it did in the past, and there's a future and a past. What we're talking about is something before time. And so our minds can't wrap themselves around this because we think in time and sequentially. But the text goes on and says, at that point, now, the river begins to cascade very, very quickly. Out of fear, out of the first inception of the thought, quote, I am alone. I am separate from my creator, close quotes. Out of that thought, fear is born. Fear gives rise to that thought, and back and forth. It's a cycle. Yet in reality, it is the creator, it is the oneness of all things, perceiving itself, perceiving the creator, and creating the perception that creation is separate from creation. Just for the fun of it, just for the experience of it, just for the play, just for the novelty, just for the stimulation, just for the joy of extending itself in creation. With that thought, an explosion occurs, very much like what your scientists have called the Big Bang. They do not know how close they are. They merely need to make the shift to seeing that the Big Bang occurred in consciousness itself, not out of pure matter, because at that level there was no matter, there was no physicality, there was no up, down, left, right, there was not a single atom, there was nothing physical as we would perceive it, because there was nothing to perceive physical. In the Big Bang of consciousness, suddenly, imagine that drop of milk exploding in space, which comes into being with the thought of separation and becoming an infinite array or an infinite number of points, little droplets of milk, little droplets of consciousness, little sparks of divinity, little particles of light, all from consciousness, all within the one consciousness, all before any physicality. The text goes on and says, to use yet another analogy from your realm of science, the wave of light has now become particles of light. When and why? Who can say? Only that one who is doing the birthing of itself knows. And here's the kicker. You are that one. As these particles of light are now spread out through the infinite reaches of the pure potentiality of spirit, which is light, which is the creation, each particle possesses the exact same potential. In fact, you could not find any difference between the points of light whatsoever. None. If you were to measure them And we're using this all tongue-in-cheek because there is no size. But if you could measure them, they would have the same size. Although, at this point, there is no physicality, so there is no size. If you measured their frequency or vibration, they would all have the same frequency or vibration. Identical points of light that only seem to now have taken existence in different points of space. That is, there is the sense that while they are identical in quality and substance, there is a slight difference in the space that each one occupies, as though you took two identical pencils and put one on the left side of the table and one on the right side of the table. They're still made of the same substance, but now, in the vast continuum of space, that which is identical is occupying two points of space, and each, with the perfect freedom, mirroring the perfect freedom of the one creation. So infinite rays of light now mirroring and reflecting the perfection of the freedom of pure potentiality, which is the light of creation itself. The pure potentiality to create. Each one has within it the thought, the recognition, the perception of separation. Each one of them has within them the illusion or the dream of separation, which is the only way they can create the experience of being separate. The text goes on and says, fear has been birthed, and with it the thoughts, quote, I am alone. I am not that point of light over there. I am just myself, close quotes. And as the energy of fear continues, the contraction, the condensation, the descension continues. Now, what has burst forth instantaneously, because this is not yet requiring time, what has burst forth instantaneously is the multitude, the infinite multidimensionality, which is creation. Except that the physical universe has yet to be birthed. The physical universe requires a concept of time. For only in time does the physical dimension exist. Here is where you find what has been called in your language the hierarchy of angelic beings, angelic worlds. They are points of light just like you, but not in the experience of time, nor in the condensation that you would call physical bodies, not even the lower astral bodies. Still, this multidimensionality of creativity is a radiant dance with just a tinge of a sense of separation or otherness or fear. So I hope you get to see, sense what I'm talking about here in terms of this is just something to keep our conscious logical minds spinning, occupied, offline basically, so we can step into the experience of the way of the heart. We can step into a willingness to see and feel and experience ourselves as part of the one mind, as connected to everyone and everything we interact with, and to give up trying to understand it with the intellectual mind, to give our intellectual mind a reason to just do the exercises, to just take a breath, to just ask to be shown, to just cancel every goal, to just question what's the difference between my urging and my craving and the energy of desire, which is the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through me in each moment. Just to question that, just to awaken to the potential of learning new something new each new present moment. Learning something new constantly, eternally, because we are from the one eternal mind. We are part of consciousness itself. Again, all of this stuff, everything about the work from Dr. Michael Rice, everything about the work from Course in Miracles and A Way of Mastery and Ho'oponopono and Byron Katie's work and Diedrich Wolzak's work, everything about it is trying to point us towards experience of the creative energy expressing as us that goes beyond words each new heartbeat. So the word is not the thing. And we are never going to understand it in ways that we could then sing it, write it, express it verbally to anyone else. We are pure spirit, and it is available to us in each new present moment to step into the wise use of time. And it is available to us in each new present moment to choose love over fear, or vice versa. We can choose fear, because as the five words that summarize this entire book for me tell us over and over again, the choice is always yours. One way to look at your purpose of life is for you to choose to bless creation, all of creation in each moment. Now, is that the actual purpose of your life? Who knows? But those who have tried to use that filter for understanding their life and their interactions with others will tell you delightful. It's a delightful way to spend your time, choosing to bless creation. Is that why you're really here? Who knows? Who knows who created you? Who knows when you were created? So if you don't know any of that, it makes pretty good sense to me to use your time, your energy, your creative process that we call thought to create an experience of life that is fun, nurturing, supportive, expansive, gratitude-based, joyful. And if that makes sense to you, then you've come to the right place, because this period of time that we're calling a year, we're working through the Way of Mastery. And the Way of Mastery is offering us different thoughts, different perspectives, different actual tools and exercises to expand our experience of ourselves and our life. So, our call in number is 563-999-3581. I'm done with the reading for today, going very slowly through Lesson 16, which is a koan in itself. It's an extensive list of koans and thoughts about how can this be in the movement from that which never moves? How can we wrap our minds around the fact that we are part of the one experience of creation, and yet there are no parts? It's all one thing. How can we awaken to the ways that we are being conditioned to believe that we are different from our brother and sister, from the chair we're sitting on, from the tree we're looking at, from the mountain we climb, from the lake we swim in? How can we begin to understand our experience of life differently? How can we begin to craft a different experience of life which is expansive beyond the input of the five senses and the perceptions that our mind will create, the images that our mind creates and then tries to convince us is the truth of life outside of us. So, comments, questions, answers, testimonials, requests for help with worksheets, 563-999-3581. What's on your mind? How can we be of service? How would it benefit you to either speed up or slow down in our work through the Way of Mastery? Or what's another issue that's going on in your life that you would like support addressing? I had somebody in my office earlier today who is clearly in that, some research indicates that about 20% of the population has a set of traits that are identifiable and have been labeled highly sensitive person. And someone who is a highly sensitive person has a whole different set of filters and a whole different set of sensitivities and attunements and awarenesses than somebody who's got a normal range of sensitivity. And it is greatly useful to be able to identify these differences and what are the costs and what are the benefits. And Elaine Aron, A-R-O-N, is the woman and researcher who's been doing research on and writing books about highly sensitive people for a lot of years now. And she talks about the benefit in her life of recognizing what her sensitivities are. And it's extraordinarily beneficial, especially when you've got somebody who's highly sensitive and they've experienced traumas, because now we have layers of things that from our culture, our training would be to judge ourselves as bad or wrong or defective or weak or overly sensitive or too rigid or too controlling, or and the understanding of the ways that these energies, sensitivities, and traits interact gives people numerous ways and places in their life, times in their life where they can intervene. And so somebody who recognizes that they're highly sensitive doesn't just live in a closet, doesn't refuse to go out of the house, and yet they can develop skills, mental exercises, meditations, visualizations that they can do before they go out to the Chicago Fest or to the Taste of Chicago or to the Lollapalooza, you know, Rock Fest. Because they know that when they're there, they're going to have a much more intense experience of all of the people and the movement and the sounds and the lights and than somebody who is not highly sensitive. And so they can brace themselves for it, and they can debrief after it, and they can limit their exposure to it, all with the lens that says, I need to do this to be self-wise because I have these gifts. You know, if I can reframe my traits, my skills, my intelligences, my sensitivities as gifts unique to me, then it's a proactive way to short-circuit the tendency from our culture to judge myself against somebody else and then come up short. And then I have these negative judgments against myself, and I have self-loathing thoughts, and I have low self-esteem and low self-confidence, and I've got that negative roommate voice in my head that's constantly criticizing me for not being as slender as so-and-so, or not being as smart as so-and-so, or not being as organized as so-and-so. But if I can just understand that an accurate assessment of my traits, my skills, my weaknesses, my strengths, with complete acceptance is so much more beneficial, is so much more higher functioning than labeling, judging, criticizing, always being in competition. And if I'm somebody who has the traits that we identify as highly sensitive people traits, and I don't understand this, I will probably live a tortured life. I will probably be consistently comparing myself to the other 80% of the population who do not have these higher sensitivities, who do not struggle with feeling overwhelmed by the sights and the sounds and the movement in a crowd or at a rock fest or at an airport, you know, at peak travel time. If I'm comparing myself to other people, I love the way Guy Finley says this. He says, the vast majority of your negative emotional states and upsets, mental, emotional, psychological upsets, is the bitter fruit of a comparative life. The moment you start comparing yourself to someone else, you're initiating suffering on top of whatever stresses or strains or discomfort might come from living in a human body. And it's not necessary. The suffering is the additional layer of the dream of separation that we can add that we don't need to. But it's entirely self-induced nonsense. One of my favorite acronyms for the word sin. Self-induced nonsense. When I compare myself to someone or something else, I am initiating a level of suffering that's unnecessary. So, that's our presentation for today, and we will continue again tomorrow on Friday. I would like to remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tam. I appreciate you. Hope you have a good afternoon.
Thanks. You too. Blessings.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Thursday, July the 14th, 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And then you press 1, and that puts a hand up, and we know you want to talk, and we would love to hear from you. Because when you ask the questions and you start the conversation, it makes it your show. Welcome, Michael. Hello, Michael. I'm not sure if he can hear me or not. So, are you there, Michael? Let me step in and see if he's having issues with his earphones or something.
I am.
Oh, okay.
My headset I didn't realize was disconnected from my phone, so my apology. So welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. Looking forward to what unfolds today in our session here on the show. And then what unfolds this afternoon in, 2.5 hours at 3:30, Eastern Time with our book study out of London, England, 8:30 this evening. Hear My Voice Book Club hosts a study of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And we are just delighted and honored to be able to participate in that. So if you care to join us, check the link for today's show. I'm sure Jeannie will have the notes for today's show. I'm sure Jeannie will have a link there. And or you can go to Why Again, whyagain.org. And there you'll find under events a link to listen in to the Zoom call. We'll be doing some questions and answers, so if you have any there or if you have any for the show here, we'll have the opportunity to do those. And we'll get to interact with folks from all over the world. There's quite an array of people that Yinka has gathered. Yinka's a young lady in England that runs the book club, and so she's gathered quite a gathering of people from all over the world. So it's been fun to interact with that group. And you can access the archives from those shows by going to our website. And Jeannie, where exactly will the archives show up?
So if you click on the schedule and then it says Global Online Book Club, if you click that, it has the link to get into the book club. And let's clarify, it's 8:30 their time in London. It's 3:30 our time.
Right. 3:30
Eastern time. Yeah. But if you, and my computer just says its connection isn't good, so hold on a second. So if you click on schedule and then click on Global Online Book Club or go to events and click on it, the first thing would be the Zoom link to get into the book club and the meeting ID and the passcode. And then if you scroll on down, it has every recording that we've done. So they're all listed right there.
Awesome. One more resource of many that we have developed and continue to develop. And of course, if this work is touching your life and you'd like to help us to develop more resources, there is a donate button on the website. And we would appreciate having your support in bringing this work forward on a global scale. Our commitment ultimately is to make the tools available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And you can play a part in that if you choose to click that donate button. Or if there's a scale you have that might be able to assist us in bringing together the tools and making them available on a global scale. So there are archives of the radio show. You know, in our 11th year, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. I'm not sure exactly how many shows that adds up to, but well over 3,000. 3,000 hours of conversation, just totally and completely tuned to why is this happening to me again, and all of the corollary tools. So those conversations over the last 11 years have gone far and wide in the area of looking at just about each and every one of the tools that we've developed over the years, and looking into the Aramaic context of the idea of forgiveness, what the process of forgiveness actually means, as opposed to our culture's fake forgiveness is, I have pain going on inside of me, and I know it's all your fault, but it's okay, I'll let you off the hook, I'll forgive you for what's happening inside of me, which of course is pretty silly to think about. I'm going to forgive another for what's happening in me. If someone does something that's bizarre and off the wall, I might choose to pardon them. That's a reasonable thing. But I need to call it what it is if I'm ever going to keep my mind straight, because if I lose the accurate definitions of words, then I'm going to lose the ability to apply the possibility of those words when they're used accurately. So letting someone off the hook, pardoning, great, nice thing, wonderful thing to do. But if you call that forgiveness, then you're going to think you're finished with your forgiveness work. The person who says, oh, Michael, you know, I've already forgiven everybody, my mother, my father, my sister, my brother, my kids, my parents, my spouse, my former spouse, I've even forgiven my future spouses. You know, the person who says that to me, I know they have done zero forgiveness work today. Absolutely none. If you're still talking about it, if you're still listening to people who are telling you you need to forgive yourself or you need to forgive someone else, they're not talking about forgiveness. Vladimir Lenin said in his writing, the way you destroy a culture is change the meaning of its words. And if we change the meaning of our words, if we lock into what is not forgiveness and pretend that it is, then, oh yeah, we can be talking about how it's all everybody else's fault and we've let them off the hook. But that doesn't address the fact that the root of the trauma or the pain that's happening, that I'm feeling in my physiology, is inside of me. You know, if I'm feeling it in my physiology, I'm feeling it because it's in me. And until I learn to remove it, I'm going to get to live the title of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And people, you know, think that pain is unmanageable, but there's no unmanageable pain. All that pain is the energy that results from holding on to something that doesn't belong inside of us. And when people step into hopelessness, that's when they go to violence in order to try to regain control of their lives. And people who try to regain control of their lives while blaming everybody else for their lives are stuck in a place where they give away their power, have no access to their own power, because every time something they don't like happens, their conversation, their focus, the space in their minds from which they make up their perceptual constructs is always about somebody else. So blame is a way to give away your power. Responsibility is a way to take it back. Get back on track with the truth of who we are. And the truth of who we are, if you haven't tapped into that idea yet, is if you hold a newborn child, you will get a direct experience of active present love, human life. And when we are restored to life, when we're restored to the truth of who we are, then life begins to function as it's designed, as well, I shouldn't say as it's designed to, because it's always functioning as it's designed to. We're not going to change the way life functions, but it unfolds as it's designed to. Life is not designed to unfold in pain and trauma and sadness and sorrow and hurt and rage and guilt. So when I realize that what's going on inside of me is what's going on inside of me, I have to be able to identify correctly the problem so that I can accurately identify the solution. And most people hear responsibility as, ha, huh, you mean I'm guilty, I'm at fault, I'm to blame for that? No, if you look at the worksheet, you'll notice that it's a no-fault process. We're not looking to establish who's at fault. And you'll notice that in the word responsibility, there's nothing about guilt, fault, or blame. Recognizing that energetically, I am involved in everything that happens in my life is a key to taking responsibility and recognizing that if I hold something painful in my mind that I keep hidden from myself, then in denying, in living in the world of it's all somebody else's fault, I lock my power up in my brain's image of them, and it seems like I'm powerless and they're the ones with the power. And it seems like they're the cause, when in fact other people are just the trigger of what's going on inside of me. And there's kind of a shocking thing when people realize their responsibility, and that is if they want change to happen, they actually need to change. Oh, but this is the way I do it. Well, okay, so if the way you do it has led to pain and trauma and turmoil, and you want something to change, Notice the extreme insanity that people go to try and get others to change. And guess what? It's not in your purview to change others. But you must be open to look at the part of you that needs to be changing, that needs to shift, and become aware of the self-talk in your own mind that is based in hostility and fear, and shift it. So willingness becomes key. Now, if I'm in pain, my thinking is in error. There's something off base in me, because pain is just a signal. So thoughts are energy, and thoughts draw results. There's a law called the law of resonance. And if you go to the opening words in the book of John, and I repeat this over and over and over again because it is such a key starting point. You know, if your starting point's in error for any project, then your error becomes provable from within the context of the starting point. So if you're in willingness, if you're in a space where you're willing to own the fact that, okay, if my thinking is in error, then the energy that I engage is going to cause me pain, then I can, you know, put away my magnifying glass, you know, trying to find who else is to blame, and take out my mirror and look at myself and recognize that my mind energy through resonance draws the results in my life and also creates the energetic impact in my physiology of those thoughts. So recognizing that the way I think produces the constructs in my mind. And if my thinking is off base, then the constructs in my mind are off base. And when the constructs in my mind are off base, I engage in energy dynamics that don't belong within my physiology. And where I put those energy dynamics, my physiology says, ouch. Now I've got pain. If I'm in pain, my thoughts are in error. Now it takes time to build the brain cells to think differently. And so have patience and work with these tools and you'll find yourself just moving into spaces of understanding and gaining in the ability to process energy that never belonged within your structure in the first place. You know, all you have to do is have a thought structure for a particular reality in your mind, and your mind will produce a picture. You know, the purpose of the mind is to give us visual images based upon what our thoughts are. So people over and over and over again experience realities, mind structures that never happened except in their own mind. And so perception, the structures of our mind have reference point to the actual world, but they are not the actual world. You know, there's some interesting Harvard research, again, would, you know, integrate this deeply and understand it. You know, they've hooked people up to electrodes and measured brain cell firings. And in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of data that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits. Just a little tiny, tiny piece of the 10,000 brain cells that are firing. And in that same time frame, it's been estimated that there are perhaps 20 trillion bits of data in the actual world. And when you start thinking about the fact that, you know, here we are in this little clump of clay in the middle of space, where the immensity of the universe is just unfathomable. You know, in truth, we're like a fly looking at a mountain and trying to understand it. And as long as we hold certain thoughts about the mountain's going to appear a certain way because our mind constructs our perception of the mountain out of our thoughts, not out of the data that comes from the mountain. Yes, there are reference points to the mountain, but our perception of it. So one person looks at a mountain and shuts down and goes to bed. Another person looks at a mountain and says, I'm going to climb. Another person looks at a mountain and says, ah, gold, silver. Another person looks at a mountain and, you know, what are the possibilities? And so it is with everything in life. So we can experience, especially based on our genetics, literal structures of mind, pictures, things that we think we see out there that are a result of what's moving inside of us, the mind energy moving inside of us. And if we take that mind structure from place to place to place, you know, I'll often ask the question, how many of you have ever taken the geographic cure? You go to the other side of the country where people will be different. How does the person at the other end know how to finish the sentence that the person that dropped you off started? They don't. But you take a mind structure with you that gives continuity to your perception. And if you have certain perceptual constructs about living in this location, the geographic cure, you take those constructs with you. And when you do, you're going to tend to say, why are they doing this to me again? Why is this happening to me again? And you think that what's happening again is external, when the truth is it's the internal play, simply being massaged to look a little different, but the structure of the mind is the same. The technology that's needed to change that is the technology with which you change your mind. And that technology in the ancient Aramaic language is forgiveness. Literally, knowing how to remove mind energy that leads to degrading the creative possibilities of your life. And the way that your mind informs you that there are degraded possibilities there is you have pain. And I mean literally right down to and including so-called physical pain. Now, of course, when you get to the truth of it, when you understand from the point of view of what actuality is, you realize that there's no such thing as a body. You know, you listen to Einstein, you hear Einstein say, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. He says, what we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. Now here's Einstein saying it. There is no matter. Well, if there is no matter, then how is it that I experience a material world? You don't. But when you believe there's such a thing as matter, when you think that everything is matter rather than energy, then your mind structures life to look like matter. But that's an appearance. Remember this man, Yeshua, 2,000 years ago said, don't judge by appearances. You got to give that game up. And you've got to recognize that your mind is continuously offering you opportunities to change what's in it if you choose to take responsibility. But if your thought is somebody else is to blame, then your mind will always structure your perceptual constructs to hold to the belief that somebody else is the cause of what's moving inside of you. And, you know, I can't say it too often. If something's moving inside of me, the reason it's moving inside of me is because it's inside of me. And I need to learn how to collapse perception. My perception's based in hostility or fear, because perceptions based in hostility or fear are perceptions based in errant data, in corrupt data. And so when I take responsibility and I begin to remove those things, now I may not like something that's happening in my world, but I don't have to be in pain about it. There may be something that my culture, that my world view, my the way I was raised. This is crazy, terrible, awful, evil, ugly, nasty. And, you know, put all the degenerative, all the negative labels on it that you want. But nothing that is labeled that way is the cause of your pain. The truth about you is that you are being called love, and you can bring that being. Now, if that hasn't been seen in your bloodline in 1,000 generations, you've got some work to do to get to the point to get back to where that becomes your norm. So there's work to be done. And the idea of these tools is to have the tools with which to do the work, to return to the place where we live and create our lives consciously, purposely, from a space of active love, rather than from a space of fear, hostility, rage, guilt, grief, drama, or trauma. So putting the tools to work is the objective of this work. And we are here 5 days a week to support that objective being achieved. And the objective is to make the specifically, you know, all of the tools, but in particular, the tool of forgiveness available literally to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. So we are honored and delighted that you're here to be part of this conversation. If you're listening to the show on one of those stations where we can't see you, over syndicated, then you can't push one on your phone and talk to us. However, if you dial into the show, and the dial-in number is 563-999-3581, if you dial into the show, you'll be listening to the show directly on your phone. And then all you need to do is push one, and we'll be having a conversation. 563-999-3581. And so if you have a question or a thought for us, now's the time to push one. Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is quiet on both fronts.
Ah, well, then let's put out the call. What's on your mind? How can we support you? The tools are available. If you're not using the forgiveness tool, we suggest that you get a copy of the worksheet, put the pen to the paper, or download the app. You can go to the App Store on your phone and just type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. You'll see an icon with a heart in it. That's our forgiveness app. Download it. You can do the worksheet process right there on your phone. You can go to our website, and Gene's got it set up so that you can actually do a worksheet live on your computer on our website and then print it off. Or you can download the worksheets from the website, and there are lots of instructions for how to use it. There are at least 20 different radio shows. We've got, I think, now two different archives from the I Hear My Voice book study club where we've done worksheets with people. So there are lots of examples for you to take and listen to and walk through the process with us. And then, of course, the reason we're here every day is to answer questions, to support you in taking these tools and putting to work in your life. So if you're out there in listener land and you have a question for us, now's the time to push one. Let's have a conversation. And make note on your, put an alarm in your phone so at 3:30 you join us for the book club as well. Go to whyagain.org under events and you'll see the Hear My Voice book club, and there's a Zoom link there. You can join us at 3:30 Eastern Time.
And this Saturday is breathwork.
Oh, yes, that's right. 11 o'clock on Saturday, we're doing the Mind Shifters to Still Point Breathing Club. So you can join us for that if you'd like. It's a monthly event. Normally, it's the second Saturday of each month. because I was out of town this past weekend, we postponed it by a week, so it'll be next this Saturday coming up at 11 o'clock, 11 a.m. We'll do Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, and then on Tuesday, we'll do the second session in that monthly series. So if you're interested in joining us and you're not registered for that, you could drop me an email, J-E-A-N-I-E at W-H-Y-again.org. And if you drop her a note, give us your name and phone number, I'll be in touch with you to get you registered for that. And registration for that includes two videos, one that's focused on the Mind Shifters tool, and we invite everybody who's participating to do a Mind Shifter on Saturday morning before, you know, we start the workshop, or Friday night if you're wherever you are in the time frame of the world, then do it Friday night so that when we start on Saturday morning, you're ready to stir with the Mind Shifter. And if you're new to that, you'll get a video link to a Mind Shifter's instruction set, actually two of them, and that'll prepare you well for getting into the Still Point Breathing process.
I don't know where that music was coming from. There was nobody else on there.
I couldn't hear the music. There wasn't a sound on this end. That's interesting. Technology, what fun. So let's have a conversation. How can we support
you?
What's on your mind? Oh, great. Let's go for it.
Area code 808. I believe this is Miss Roma.
Yeah. Ah, welcome. We haven't heard your voice in a while. Welcome.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I'm so excited that you are extending out into the whole world. And so 3:30 today, that's 9:30 my time. So that's not long after we finish this call, huh?
Right. Yeah, we'll be finished this at 2, and in an hour and a half, 3:30, we'll start book study club. Yep.
Oh, well, I think I'll try to make it today. I'm just really curious. Oh, I think it's just, you know, it was inevitable. And it just makes me so happy that that the work is getting out there, Michael. It's totally, totally changed my life, and I just feel so grateful. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for hanging around to work for so long, for engaging in the use of the tools, for passing it on, and for the support that you've offered over the years. It's been appreciated.
Yeah, just been hanging around. Yeah, I was trying to figure out how many times I spent the summer in Heartland. I think it was, I don't know, 5 or something. It was, you think you'll ever open Heartland again?
Well, the way, you know, COVID is, you know, bouncing around the country at this point, there's no plan. But if we get past that, then that would certainly be the ideal, would be to get back on track with intensives at Heartland. You know, it's been, 2019 was our last season. And it's kind of weird not moving forward with that.
Yeah. Well, but you're moving forward anyway. So,
oh, yes.
And,
yes,
I,
all
know,
things
I,
moving forward.
That you, your definition of the word forgiveness, you're the one that expanded the consciousness of what that word means. I mean, I don't know anybody else that perceives it the way you do. I mean, you know, that forgiveness is about shifting our own internal process with the opportunity to release beliefs or fear or our hatred or our anger or, you know, all of these emotions that don't look like love and don't feel like love that are uncomfortable to us, you know. It's just
right.
such a wonderful, wonderful thing to engage in, and it impacts. I mean, I'm shocked sometimes at the dimension of love that I hear coming out of me when I'm engaging with someone in my life, you know, someone that I love, someone that I support. It's just, you know, it just surprises me what's available that didn't used to be available. I'm just grateful.
Well, I'm joining you in gratitude, and I hear, acknowledgement of discovering what forgiveness is. You know, I wasn't the one who created it, for sure. That was 2,000 years ago. I accidentally bumped into, you know, the Aramaic language from 2,000 years ago, and it was, you know, sort of accidental. And when it caught my attention, that was it. It was just like, oh, here's something that doesn't exist anywhere in the world. This is like the missing piece, P-E-A-C-E, you know,
wow.
As well as P-I-E-C-E. It's like,
right.
You know,
right.
the world talks about, oh, you forgive them and then you feel better. But letting somebody else off the hook really has nothing to do with feeling better, although what can happen is if I do pardon someone, I can break the link my mind has to my pain with them. So it'll seem like, oh, look, my pain went away when I forgave them. No, what happened was the link I had in my mind to pain with them, I broke. And so when I'm around them, I don't feel pain. And so I think I verified that forgiveness is letting them off the hook. But then, of course, sooner or later, I turn around and I find somebody else to do it with. And then if I let them off the hook, you know, and that's what I think has people believing that pardoning others is forgiveness. And it took a long time hanging out with the Aramaic teachings and words to really comprehend and put to work the real dynamic of literally understanding that pained perception comes from pained physiology, and when I can collapse my perception back into my physiology, then I can access the underlying energy and remove it, and that's the real forgiveness work.
Yeah. And then it just doesn't come back. You get to a point where it just doesn't come back anymore. If it's coming back, you know it hasn't really... forgiven. Yeah.
Right. And or there may be deeper levels of work to be done. We can do actual forgiveness work. You know, when they sent to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, well, you know, in essence what they said was, well, how many of these darn worksheets do we have to do? Is seven enough if I forgive my brother seven times? Now, in the translations from the Aramaic, they missed two words when they said, if I forgive my brother seven times. And in Aramaic, it would be more properly translated is, if I forgive as to my brother seven times. And that as to turns everything around, because
absolutely,
it's not about forgiving my brother. It's about forgiving, removing in me what my brother perhaps has triggered in me, given me the opportunity to see. And I might do that seven, or when they asked him that question, he turned back and said, no, he said 77 times 70, which means that in any given arena where we have pain connected to others, we're going to forgive as an infinite number of times until I've literally cleared that pain totally and completely out of my structure. And it's no longer there to be hooked up to my brain's image of anybody. There's nobody to blame because it's not there anymore.
Well, after 33 years of interacting with you, I heard something just now that I never actually heard before, which was the phrase, as to.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard you say that before. Although something in the back of my mind is telling me I have heard it, but I didn't get it. But this time, I got it.
You got it. All right. Well, that's the power of building brain cells. That's, you know, there's when you listen to Yahshua, he says, if you got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, you got to have the brain cells before the mind can generate a construct to match it.
Yeah.
And that's what it takes. But I know in the when I first started hearing that and I heard this, forgive as to your brother, it was just like, for me, I can remember the early days, it was like confusion. What does it mean to forgive as to your brother?
Yeah.
And then as I built the brain cells, I realized that, oh, okay, so if my brother resonates something in me that's painful, then I forgive as to what he's resonated in me. I don't forgive him. So if he can bring up my rage, my fear, my sadness, my grief, whatever it is, I forgive as to what he's brought up in me, not him. And that's where the Greeks turned it around. And losing those two words, it became about pardoning others and totally changing the meaning of the word. And in essence, we live in a world where there is no forgiveness. I mean, go find me somewhere where there's a conversation that tells you that when you forgive, you go inside yourself and remove content that is pained in your own mind. It's like there's only one place on the planet I know that exists. And even people, I mean, there have been people who've written books based on my worksheet, on my work, and they all go back to, yeah, you got to forgive them. If somebody's talking about forgiving them, they're not talking about forgiveness work. It's just, you know, but, you know, it's such a fine point, such a subtle point that it takes time to comprehend.
Yeah. 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 It's a great distinction. And that's one of the, you know, I've been really, really interested in learning more about the Aramaic and hearing more of the Aramaic for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years.
You're kind of cutting in and out a little bit.
Oh yeah, I'm tired. I worked for almost 4 hours in the middle of the night. I put labels on packages in the middle of the night twice a week. My little part-time job.
Awesome.
I just entertain myself that way. That's all. But
that's
anyway,
cool.
So I'm
a little
extra tired.
Cash flow never hurt anybody.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt.
No.
I just turned 79, though, which means that I am beginning to experience my 80th year.
All right, just a kid.
I guess in some parts of the world they count your birthdays differently. I can't remember. I remember I heard about that once, but I don't remember which countries they are. But they count at the beginning of the year rather at the end of the year. So, well, I think...
Well, at eight decades is an awesome start.
Yeah, the new decade. Yeah. Right. All right. I'm going to say aloha from
aloha.
From my beautiful island paradise. I do live
all
in
right.
heaven. That's certain. And
yes,
I
love Maui. It is an awesome place to live, I'm sure.
It really is, yeah. I feel very fortunate to be here.
Sweet.
So I
well,
send
nice
you
to
all.
Hear your voice.
Oh, thank you so much. And you keep on keeping on.
We're on it. All right, take care.
Okay, take care.
Blessings. Bye-bye. Well, Miss Jeannie, we've got about 20 minutes left.
And there's no hand up, so come on, press one.
Well, there you are. You're out there. Let's have a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Or maybe you've got something to share of your experience of the tools. What has using the tools done in your world, in your life, in your relationships, or your finances? Or call in and share with us what that looks like. Five six three 888-999-3581. By the way, thank you, everyone, for the I've gotten some texts from folks just telling me that you're holding me and my throat, especially. It's about 85% better today, so I'm on the upside of it. Thank you, God. But thank you for all the support out in. Thank you for the posts that people have done on the Facebook page we set up for Joel and his family. That's it was a real privilege to be there with him in that period where he was preparing, actively preparing to head out of his body. And I feel blessed by the fact that it's probably almost 40 years ago that Joel and I started hanging out. And he used to represent me and book me in different places around the country way back in the early days. And so he's checked out of his earthly form. And I'm sure he's still writing songs. I posted one of his songs this morning just in honor of him. He wrote a great tune that I over and over and over and over again said to him, he's got to get to Garth Brooks. It's a tune about the Beatles called My Friends, George Ringo, John and Paul. And it's kind of a cool memory song. If you're on my Facebook page, give a listen. I posted it just an hour or two ago. And he sings about how, you know, he'd never written a song until he heard the Beatles and how they inspired him and how they became his friends and saw him through marriages, you know, cats, you know, all the experiences that the Beatles were with him in his life. So it's a pretty sweet tune that I think could be a mega major hit. If somebody like Garth Brooks picked it up, it would be just a gangbuster tune. And Joel wrote a lot of music with some powerful messages in it. He really honored this work and really engaged it. And it was, I think, sometimes inspiration for him in writing songs. If an event happened, sure, Joel would write a song about it. In fact, when I went to first visit him in hospice, it said that he was in his last minutes. One of the things that sparked his attention and actually got him humming was I mentioned the fact that here he is laying in a hospital bed being told that he's about to die. I said, Joel, there's got to be a song in this. I know there's a song in it. So I started to make up a song and sing it. And, you know, I mean, Joel was pretty much comatose. He would squeeze your hand if you asked him a question, but that was about it. And quite literally within 3 minutes, Joel was humming along with the song I was writing about, you know, here I am laying in this hospital bed and all these thoughts going through my head. Joel starts humming away, and within 10 minutes, he was up and conversing, singing. And got to the point where hospice said, you got to get out of this hospital. We can't have you here anymore because you're not qualified. You're not close enough to death. And unfortunately, his wife picked up COVID, and it appears transferred it to him, and the COVID was just too much for him. So hold space for Joel and those, you know, many of you over the years have met Joel. He lived at Heartland for a couple of years. And so many of you I met through Joel with the bookings that he did in the early days, this work, the singing dentist. You need to look him up on Spotify, or it's Joel, J-O-E-L, Goldstein, G-O-L-D-S-T-E-I-N. You can look him up on YouTube. He's got a bunch of albums on YouTube. And he's just a prolific songwriter and entertainer. So thank you, Joel, for gracing our lives. And we've still got about 15 minutes left, so let's have a conversation. 563-999-3581. Push 1. Let's talk about it. What's on your mind? And since we've got the Hear My Voice book club in just an hour and a half, Jeannie, or an hour and 45 minutes now, if we don't have any other conversation to be had, then I think we'll just say thank you to everybody for joining us for the day and create the best year yet of your eternal life. It is an awesome gift to give the world. You can give it. The world needs it. Join you in doing it. Have a blessed day. Bye-bye.